Education, our calendar is 99-1771, Hamilton County Community Mental Health Board versus Jeffrey Steele. Mr. Smith.
My name is Shannon Smith, along with Jim Bell, seated at the council table. I represent Jeffrey Steele. I would like to reserve 2 minutes. The Court of Appeals decision in this case held that the trial court had erred and held the board was required to show dangerousness in addition to lack of capacity and the force of medication. And they couched it in the terms of they were required to show, not required to show before the board was entitled to make the decision whether to force Steele to submit to medication. I submit to the court that it's not the board's decision, and I think the appellate court run a little bit of a field there. The appellate court's wording indicates that the court felt it was a medical decision to be made by the board as opposed to a legal decision to be made by the court. The trial court in this case correctly held that Steele had not been adjudicated incompetent as under 5122.301. He had the unequivocal right to refuse medical treatment unless he was in present danger to himself or others. And there was no testimony adduced at the hearings before specifications that that Steele was dangerous to himself or others. 5122.301 states it's relevant part to this case that any person admitted to a hospital or otherwise taken into custody voluntarily or involuntarily retains all civil rights not specifically denied in the revised code or removed by adjudication of incompetence following a judicial proceeding other than under sections 5122.11 to 5122.15 of the revised code. That section goes on to list, and it states without limitation, several civil rights, most of which are less basic and fundamental than the right to decide what should be taken into one's body. This court in Milton held that one of those rights was the right to refuse medication on religious grounds. Here we're saying that we think it's a right to refuse medication on any grounds if they have not been found incompetent.
Do you think that the case regarding religious grounds could be legally distinguishable in that it would be calling upon the First Amendment rights?
That would be calling upon First Amendment rights, but it might be legally distinguishable as to that particular case, but there's no doubt that a basic civil right is the right to refuse medication for whatever reason. In the Milton case, it happened to be for religious reasons, and I can't put down on that, but the statute says without limitation.
Well, in this case, we have a patient who's exercising. This is a right that he wants to exercise, though he has been determined to maybe not be incompetent. We know the definitions of incompetence and involuntary commitment coincide. They essentially track each other.
I feel there's a muddling of the terms there, and lack of capacity to consent is the term that's often used.
And we're talking about a consensual, this is a right to withhold consent, and yet we are speaking about an individual whose ability to consent is in question.
His ability to consent may be in question, but the statute in Ohio says incompetence, and if you talk around incompetence by talking to lack of consent or lack of ability to consent, you are then avoiding all the protections that a finding of incompetence gives to the individual. He's got a right, if he's incompetent, to a substituted judgment. Our statutes call for a guardian to be appointed, someone who can substitute their judgment for this individual who's incompetent.
And he doesn't have that in this case because there was no competency here, so there's no one who can speak for him.
There's no one to speak for him. His attorney, and of course, med's hearing is the closest thing he has to someone that has a substituted judgment.
There was never any thought, I guess, of applying for guardian for him, is that right?
There was no guardianship applied for. I was not involved at that level. I saw nothing that indicated that anyone had ever started guardianship proceedings. But I do know that there never was a guardian appointed for him.
Is the current status of the law that this person could not be forced to choose surgery against his will without a communication from the hospital?
I believe under 5122.271, that is true. He must be found incompetent and the guardian to be appointed. Who would then give informed consent to the surgery?
Are not psychotropic drugs every bit as invasive and every bit as permanent damage in surgery to be?
I think so.
I had a psychotropic reaction to a drug I was taking.
You can appreciate this more than I can, but I look at these people and I see the after effects.
Was that argued before the Court of Appeals? That is a problem with my state of practice.
Sounds really like a conflict.
Was that argued before the Court of Appeals, the devastating effects of that drug can have?
Yes, it was.
And the adverse reaction?
Based on basketball.
It's not addressed.
Okay.
In the decision.
More than once.
The Court of Appeals decision did not address several factors. I don't believe it's pointed out the word constitutional did not appear in the Court of Appeals decision.
They seem to hinge solely on the fact that he couldn't really understand what he was doing, so somebody was going to make a decision for him without any of the legal protection of guardianship or substitute judgment.
Right.
They made it to some medical profession to make that decision.
Right. And that's why my opening remarks think that the Court of Appeals treated this as a medical decision and not as a legal decision. Competency is a legal term, has a legal definition. Lack of capacity, and I looked all through the code, I couldn't find lack of capacity, with the exception that in the statutes dealing with age of the elderly and so forth, incapacitation was defined as a lack of capacity to provide for your needs, something like that.
Is this case moot? The reason I ask you is because on page 2 of your brief, you say the board again objected to the magistrate's ruling. Probate court heard oral arguments. Court ruled on the matter. But before the court ruled on the matter, the parties informed the court that Steele had begun voluntarily to take psychotropic medication. Then, when I go to your conclusion on page 12, you give us the same thing that it was like a memorandum in support of jurisdiction in your merit brief. You say, for the reasons discussed, this matter involves great general interest. The appellant requests the court to grant jurisdiction.
What? That in the brief?
Yes, sir. It's obvious. Came off the word processor. My problem is, what do you want?
We want a ruling. We want a standard for forced medication. I believe that Mr. Hoffman would probably get up and say pretty much the same thing. We want a standard for forced medications because there is some.
That may be true, but we're supposed to have a case or controversy before us.
Is he already taking
the medication, you say, and I don't find any prayer for relief that you want us to do. But I guess what you're saying is you want us to say you can be forced under these circumstances or you cannot. All right. Now, if we say you cannot do what you're asking, does he quit taking the drugs that he's already taking?
Would this particular individual quit? I doubt it.
Okay. So if we say that he has to keep taking them, he keeps taking them.
But,
so what have we decided?
It's a question that's going to come up and come down. These things are of temporary nature. Somebody starts taking medications, he goes up.
Well,
quite often they do.
I've been here 15 years or over, and I've seen one other case, and that was on the religious grounds. So it doesn't come up over and over again.
Down below it does. I mean, there are forced medication hearings, the day before the forced medication hearing, the individual starts taking the medication, so
anything. It's an issue capable of.
But whatever we do,
all
issues are like that with possibilities, whether or not it's a continual thing that evades review or is likely to come before us again. Whatever we decide in this case doesn't affect your client, though.
I don't think it will. It might. We might say, look, Jeffrey, you don't have to do this anymore.
Were you privately retained?
For this case, no.
How do you get here?
The chief magistrate of the probate court requested that I take this up. The court had a great interest in this case. I agreed to do it.
But it comes up as an issue over and over because the problem is that we would find these defendants in cases or otherwise. As soon as they feel okay, they stop taking medication. When they get compensated, they're back as voluntarily committed. And they may say a second time, that's the first time, I ain't taking this time. And that's the cycle that you have in a short term that you can't wait 4 years for appeal to get to the number of the issues.
I don't think so. I don't think that the appellate court felt that it was moot. And the appellate court knew that he had not started taking medication on his own. It was, quite frankly, they've been looking in the Hamilton County Probate Court, they've been looking for to take up for a long time. The jury still presented the ideal case to take up.
So as I understand it, they tried to medicate him, and he initially refused. And then there was a hearing in the probate court that said, you can medicate him.
No.
The magistrate said otherwise.
Right.
And the probate court said otherwise.
And the magistrate said it twice. It was remanded. There was a hearing before the magistrate.
Mm-hmm.
He denied the application for forced medication.
Mm-hmm.
The board appealed to the judge. The judge remanded it for additional findings on the issue of dangerousness. There was another hearing.
Remanded it to the magistrate.
To the magistrate.
All right, go ahead.
And my understanding is just prior to the second hearing in front of the magistrate,
mm-hmm.
Jeffrey started taking medication.
Okay.
They proceeded. They denied the force meds order. The judge affirmed that decision, and then the court took it up.
So at that point, the trial court said no force medication.
That's correct.
And the board took it to the Court of Appeals.
That's correct.
And the Court of Appeals said, yes, you can.
Yes, they did.
And then the trial court came to you and said, would you appeal this to the Supreme Court?
The trial court asked me to... The chief magistrate of the trial court asked me to take up.
Okay, that's the trial court. Asked you to appeal a court of appeals decision that they had lost. Okay. Are you being paid by the probate court then? Hamilton County?
We haven't really gone through that yet.
Oh.
I did say that I'd like expenses coming.
You should have.
I will submit a voucher.
But isn't the question presented for us to determine is whether or not a determination has to be made on whether he's dangerous to himself or others. The trial court felt that that they didn't show that issue. The Court of Appeals says, no, you don't have to show it. And aren't we here on that question?
That's the question we're here on.
Yes.
So not only did the Court of Appeals say they don't have to show it, but even if they did have to show it, the fact that he was committed 2 months ago, and in that commitment was found to be dangerous to himself because he couldn't provide for his own needs, that would satisfy
Well, they said that the mere fact of commitment shows he's dangerous. Or they inferred that.
That's what they said. They just inferred. They said the fact that he was committed, he means he's dangerous still today. And in the cases we cited in the brief, it's all come down on the side that he's got to be an active danger at the time force medications are applied for.
And if there's no evidence showing that he's a danger to himself or to others, then he cannot be forcibly
Correct.
Medicated.
Correct. And that was the standard in Hamilton County. There are different standards in most every county in the state. I can understand, and in talking to the amicus about the brief, in his brief, he covers that.
And that's the question that the trial court wants answered.
Yes. And the board wants answered, and I think we want answered.
And the definition of dangerousness is pretty brought up the danger to be, I'm not feeding myself. So it's not going to go out.
Such advisory opinion? Pardon? Such advisory opinion? That's what it is. I just wanted to get you a bit critical of what I was suggesting. And sometimes it comes out. What do you say? That's my position too. I mean, that's my position too.
But your argument is that there has to be, 301 requires an adjudication of incompetency. That's your point. Is it in the disjunctive? I mean, if they can show that the Court of Appeals seems to say not be concerned about that technicality of the statute, which is pretty clear. It's plain words. Because he's been involuntarily committed to the institution, and that's enough. But your argument is that is not enough.
Right. And the case of Milton supports that. Adjudication, probate poll or finding of the needs to be hospitalized is not an adjudication.
It's a guilty move. It's a guilty process.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Mr. Albin.
Can't please support Chief Justice Mario Justices. I'm the one who wrote this case. And I've been arguing this issue for 9 years, so I'm glad to be here today. Our position is clear. It's going to be up to the court to decide. If I can hold somebody in a hospital on an involuntary probate, keep them in a hospital against their will when they want to leave, the statute says it's supposed to treat that person. The person is incompetent to give or withhold informed consent for medical decisions. If I have a magistrate and 5 doctors all tell me this person is incompetent, benefits of the medication clearly outweigh the side effects. If he takes the medication, he'll get better. If he doesn't, he'll get worse or stay the same. Do I have to show dangerousness in the hospital? And it's not just Jeffrey Steele. It's every time you have a patient in the hospital who doesn't have to be, quote, dangerousness, unquote, a person who lies in the bed all day and stares at the seals.
Counsel, what is it that, in your view, I should call it the ideal world, because there's no ideal world in this arena that you're dealing with. What is it that you would envision would be the most appropriate mechanism to deal with this issue when a patient refuses?
I'm glad you asked, because I wrote it all last night. This is what I would want your opinion in the ideal world. This is what I want your opinion to read. One, in order to forcibly medicate a person against their will, one, they have to have mental illness. Two, they have to lack capacity to give or withhold informed consent to medical treatment. Three, you have to have the benefits outweigh the side effects of the medication. And four, you have to have some kind of determination that's in their best interest. They'll get better with it. They don't take it, they'll stay the same and get worse. And most importantly, unlike Washington versus Harper, which floats around these courts like it's the word from on high, I don't want a medical review committee of a bunch of doctors. I want a magistrate or a judge to make this decision. I want this man to be represented. I want him to have a chance to cross-examine.
Well, isn't that a competency hearing? Because I'm listening.
Exactly right. It is a competency hearing. And under 5122, our 210124, the probate court has exclusive jurisdiction to hear and determine actions involving informed consent for medication of persons hospitalized pursuant to 5122-141, 5122-15. I don't want to take away Jeffrey Steele's rights. I mean, in this case, I am more sympathetic with people in the hospital than anybody else. It's not fair that I can keep them in a hospital and keep them there against the will and not treat them. It's not fair to them. I know that there's possible we have a public interest. I don't care about the public interest.
So
I care about Jeffrey Steele.
You envision all the points to be determined, that determination should be made by a court.
Yes, I don't want the hospital. And in Washington versus Harper, they have a prison review committee decide whether Mr. Harper should take the medication. Well, I don't think you have to have a lot of imagination to see what that's going to go with the prison review commission. I want a court. justice. And that's what happened to Jeffrey Steele. I'm not saying here's a hospital.
Well, except,
I'm saying that here and let the court decide.
Except the court didn't follow the statute. Did it? I mean, if you want the court to do it, why don't we say the court should do it the way the statute says?
The court did do it the way the statute is.
Okay, was there an adjudication of incompetence following judicial proceedings?
No, you don't have to, Chief Justice, and I'll tell you why. Because 201-24 says that it's up to the magistrate and probate court, or the judge and probate court, in a mental health determination. If you do it the way the applicants want in this case, what's going to happen is I'm going to put someone in the hospital against their will. I am then going to have a hearing, initial hearing, inside the mental ill. The person now they're sitting in the hospital, assuming they're mentally ill and they're at risk of harm to self or others out of the hospital. Then I'm going to decide, this person's sick, they need medication, but they just tear the walls off them. Now what I've got to do is I've got to apply for garbage. Now that presupposes, one, I can find a garbage. In Hamilton County, I can't find garbage. And two, I'm going to go up there, and what am I going to do in my guardianship hearing? Well, Justice Resnick picked it right up. I'm going to do exactly the same thing in my guardianship hearing that I'm doing in my course meds hearing, probably less. In Jeffrey Steele, we had 5 doctors testify. And we never dreamed that it was ever going to get up here. I hope someday I'd be able to argue this issue up here. But we didn't set up Jeffrey Steele just so we could come up here and argue the law with you folks. It just so happened we wanted to show that there was dangerousness with Jeffrey Steele. And then it just went on from there.
And what's your definition of dangerousness?
Well, dangerousness in a hospital is going to be up to the trial of fact. But I've got to tell you, Justice Stratton, part of the problem here with showing dangerousness is you put me, as a mental health court presenter, in a position where I am arguing ludicrous things to show dangerousness. I'm arguing that an earache is dangerous. I'm arguing that drinking ivory soap is dangerous so I can get 4 people help and get them dead. And by the way, those are both true examples. I didn't make those up off the top of my head. Both of those we had to argue dangerous. And then both of those, the magistrate found it was dangerous.
So you would argue...
So we should win this case. Trying to find dangerous.
You would argue that the fact that they were advocating involved in a committed position to be dangerous.
No, I won't go that far. I didn't argue that in the court of appeals, and I won't go that far. I think in a hospital, if they're involuntarily committed, a substantial risk of harm to self or others, we always have that moment in the care, where they can't leave the hospital, they are incompetent to make informed treatment decisions on their own, and the doctors say, and not just a doctor from the hospital, an independent court doctor, which we all use, and the benefits of the medication outweigh the side effects, and it's in their best interest.
Let me go back to that third point.
Sure.
Benefits of medication outweigh the side effects. Are you aware that I was the trial judge?
Yes, I was made aware of this morning.
Are you aware that there was a great deal of evidence presented in that case about the effect of psychotropic drugs in permanent, irreversible side effects of psychotropic drugs?
Judge, I have a problem with that. If you're a lawyer, Jeffrey Steele, you get up and say, Judge, I want you to consider this, 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 and this. All of these things may be reversible, they may be terrible side effects. Okay? And you get a couple of doctors to get up and say, Judge, don't do it. Okay, I am arguing evidence before the court. If I lose, I lose. I've done the best job I can. If I win, I win, I've done the best job I can. But I've argued. The problem is, Your Honor, up until Jeffrey Steele, that never came up. Nobody cared to argue about the benefits. Nobody argued about the side effects. And Jeffrey Steele, all 5 doctors said the benefits outweigh the side effects. And it was by history, Jeffrey Steele actually did better on medications. He was out doing well before this all happened. So, you know, sure, argue the side effects. The judge can say, look, side effects outweigh the benefits. I'm not going to order the medication. And if that happens, there isn't much I can do about it. I mean, I suppose I can take that support appeal, but it's not going to go anywhere. The problem is that...
I'm trying to understand where court is, probate court, down there, in terms of their position, where your client is. I'm taking what your client wants, or believes philosophically, is that you would like to take people like into a forced medication pattern without
qualifications instead of competency. I don't know whether he was incompetent or not, but let's assume that he might qualify to be determined incompetent. I'm guessing what your agency's philosophy is that that's a stigma that you would not like to apply to many people who can benefit from medication.
Plus the fact
that... Is that right? Is it that you're holding back from incompetency because you feel there's a stigma of
what is it? I don't fill my notes at this point, but it's one of the things I wanted to bring up was that for incompetency, if you find a person incompetent, he's a guardian, a person incompetent, then you have the reporting requirements of the guardian, which that's the guardian's problem, they got a reporter. But you also take away their money, they take away all the decisions. Sharon brought up a good point. 5122-271 or 301, they keep all the civil rights. I don't think we should be taking more civil rights away from these people. I just want to get them dead. I don't want to have them
out of it. Is that the issue? I mean,
Let me put it this way.
Is that what's at stake here? Is that
what is at stake is the fact that I have people in a hospital, not just here, all around the state, who basically could get help, could get out, lead normal lives, but they're mentally ill, incompetent to make informed treatment decisions on their own, and they aren't dangerous in the hospital. And what do we do with those patients? For 9 years, I've been arguing we can't let people sit in the hospital and rot. We've got to get them help. And for 9 years, I've been told they have to show dangerousness. And I've read every single case cited. And I got to tell you, all the cases show dangerousness, they all talk about the fact these people were also competent. I agree. If Jeffrey Steele was competent, I wouldn't be here today. If any of these patients are competent, that's their business, they don't want to take any medication, and there's no way that we can and should force them. I'm talking about people who are incompetent. We can't make these decisions on their own.
So they're incompetent, but you don't want to push them into the legal determination that they're incompetent.
Exactly right, because if they take their medication to get better, they can leave and go outside and leave their normal life. They don't have a guardianship over them. They don't have to dissolve their guardianship.
Does the judge want you to take that step, or is the judge...
I don't know. Up until Jeffrey Steele, we had hundreds, and that's not an exaggeration, forced medication cases. Every time I won, it's because they're dangerous. Every time I lost, they weren't dangerous. Until trial court's decision in Jeffrey Steele, I never, ever, ever had a court's opinion that said, if he is now not adjudicating competent. It never came up. Ever. That was out of the blue. That was even arguing over an argument. I have no idea where they came.
Can you help me proceed?
Sure.
After the Cleveland case, put it in place quick for the new jurisdiction.
Yes.
After the Cleveland case, they passed the statute, they amended the probate court, gave the probate judge the jurisdiction of the case.
Right.
Recently, due to the fact that that statute has been diluted or stripped of its power, and I couldn't quite understand that.
Amicus. I was told, now that I certainly wrote the amicus brief, before you wrote the brief, I had been told years ago that forced medication was in 5122-271 at one time, and that was taken out. So it was not considered now a major adverse circumstance. And it was taken out of that part of the statute. I don't know why.
That was the change.
That was the change. So
still
now,
has the jurisdiction,
right.
But they took forced medication out of the adverse reaction.
Right, and the amicus brief goes into more detail, but basically they took it out, and evidently it was a controversy.
Probate judges didn't like it for one thing, apparently.
Yeah, and that's what it said. I have no first-hand knowledge of that, so they took that out. Every single one of these people keeps all their civil rights, and they should keep all their civil rights. The last point I want to make, and I must be almost out of time, is they have a right to keep a professional license. When was the last time you hired an attorney in a mental hospital who was mentally ill and communicating problem? Or relaxed the capacity to hold a formal consent? They have a right to make contracts. But a person who is mentally ill and incompetent relaxed the capacity of those contracts avoid. They have a right to sign wills. But they can't really enter a will in probate court in the right mind to write a terrible will of a mentally ill person who lacks capacity. The problem is, they have all these civil rights, and it sounds great to say we're keeping all their civil rights, but the realistic issue is these persons can't exercise their rights because they're in a hospital involuntarily committed, not receiving treatment, and they're incompetent.
You're mostly arguing to us a public policy matter, and it's important that we decide those kind of issues. But I'm concerned about the law as well. Washington versus Harper, you reference, U.S. Supreme Court case, where you said it's being circulated around as the oracle or the vast authority on something or other. You cite it, and they cite it too. What does it say?
I cite the good part. They cite it for the part. And our procedures are better. In Washington versus Harper, they have a prison review committee that decides whether it is a grave mental illness,
yes,
or a substantial risk of harm to self or others in a prison facility. And they don't even talk about competency. First of all, you don't have a judge to decide.
But doesn't the bad part, quote, the bad part of Washington versus Harper say that unless you can show that they're dangerous, they have a liberty interest in not being medicated?
Right.
Doesn't it say that?
Harper was found competent. Matter of fact, the court said we're not going to be getting to the competency issue. Harper was competent. The other thing is, too, my closing remarks are almost out of time. I do a lot of criminal law. Every time I come up here, it's going to be a death penalty case problem. These people are never going to get out unless you're an attorney or a life without parole. But anybody else, they got a chance of getting out someday. You take people like this, they have no chance of getting out unless they get better. They're going to get better if they take medication. If they don't, they're locked inside that hospital for the rest of their life. If I told you that I have a doctor who can make somebody better, and by statute I'm supposed to make them better, but my doctor isn't giving them medication, you have every right to rule from a bench right now to say, give them the medication or get them out of the hospital. How dare you not treat a patient that you've been voluntarily committed in a hospital? You have an ethical, moral...
Okay, now stay with the law a minute. Do you distinguish Harper versus Washington on the basis that, in that case, the subject in question was competent and this is uncompetent?
Plus the fact we get far more procedure due process.
But he's not been declared incompetent. Legally he's competent.
Yeah.
Right, but I mean, you had five doctors
doing informed consent, but he's legally he's competent.
And I don't think we have to show a guardian incompetency. All we have to show is lack of capacity under 210124. That's all we have to show. Thank you, Your Honor. I'm out of time.
Thank you, Mr. Alvin. Mr. Smith, used your time, but you may take 30 seconds.
I just want to reemphasize that the judge is not found incompetent. As to Justice Viper's concern about the stigma of guardianship being found incompetent, those guardianship statutes are set up to protect somebody, to give them a substitute judgment. Somebody to look at what this individual would have done if he was competent.
Yeah, but everybody pulls back on that. I mean, families, when mom or grandma are
in many cases they do.
That's the last.
Does that mean that he should be deprived of the protection of the statute?
Case is submitted, you'll be advised of our opinion.